Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino is the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Hour number two, Darren, Donick, and Chase on this Monday. Hope everybody's having a good start to your day. Don't forget, coming up in the final hour, in the 1 o'clock hour, we'll hear a little bit of Chase's interview with Tom Glavine, a little game night, Facebook Live, Friday evening, and a lot of you were able to catch that. For those who did not, we're going to play a good 20 minutes of that interview, and Tom Glavine was an excellent interview, and you'll hear that coming up at 1 o'clock. Right now we talk to Adam Alexander, Fox, NASCAR on Fox, and NASCAR is back. Darlington yesterday, a lot of you are watching, including us. What would it look like? How would they pull it off? Kevin Harvick gets the win, and I just admitted, Adam, at the end of last hour, I didn't really, you know, yeah, it was, some of the stuff was kind of weird to see, but overall, it didn't affect, you know, how I viewed the product.
No, I got to admit, once we got racing, it really felt pretty much normal to me, and you notice some of the subtle changes, and certainly there were some things that were different, but top to bottom, I think it felt like once things got rolling, it was just a normal Sunday afternoon. And you couldn't help but notice when they went to wide shots or maybe an aerial, there was no one in the stands. But let's face it, we've had rainouts before where you push the race to a Monday and you have limited fans because of a day carryover. And so that's not the craziest thing. I mean, you never see them completely empty in the grandstands like what we saw yesterday, but we've certainly seen events because of weather or whatever it might be with a lean crowd. So I think even adjusting your vision to that wasn't the craziest thing. I think probably the moment that took me back the most that was totally different is when Regan Smith interviewed Kevin Harvick after he won there at the start-finish line on the front straightaway. And Kevin kind of got a bit emotional reacting to the fact that there were no fans there. That was the one time to me that it was apparently different than what we would see at a normal race day.
Yeah, that's a really good point. That was definitely weird. And then the shot of, you know, in Victory Lane, you know, he gets up on his, you know, door and he's got a mask on and he raises his hands up in the air and there's nobody else around the car, no one else around him. That is weird to see. And you're right, it was, I guess, weird that he got caught up in that moment. But overall, it was really good. But that was definitely different. How about just the whole dynamics of trying to pull this off from a broadcast standpoint? You've got Mike Joy and Jeff Gordon and, you know, in Charlotte calling the race. You got Regan Smith as the pit reporter with a mask. As you just mentioned, you know, the long mic, you know, that was put out there for Kevin Harvick to do that interview and some of the other interviews. I think Alex Bowman we saw. Just, you know, it's a little bit different, but overall, the logistics, do you think, you know, how tough was it to, I guess, pull all this off?
Well, I think when you look at what TV's been doing in recent years and the direction that it's gone from a production standpoint, we've gotten very innovative in the ways we put on shows, some of that financially based, some of it just overall new thought process, new approach, and growing with the industry. And when I think about some of the properties that Fox has had, and in particular the World Cup, where you've got broadcasters and production staffs in various cities, various countries, when you're talking about something like the World Cup, you figure out really quickly how to make different circumstances work. And I think it's all those experiences that probably laid the foundation for Fox to pull off as seamlessly as they did yesterday's show. We had a group of production people in Los Angeles. We certainly had a support staff, and our producer, Barry Landis, was here in our Charlotte studio with Mike Joy and Jeff Gordon and Larry McReynolds. And then Artie Kempner, our lead director, and a number of other production folks were at the racetrack in Darlington, obviously running cameras, and that's where our main production truck was. And so you would think it's impossible to put three different crews in three different locations and make it all work, But we're all just a headset away anyway. We've become so accustomed to communicating that way, whether you're a tape producer, a replay producer, someone in graphics, producer, director, or one of the on-air folks themselves, you're just pushing a button to talk to somebody. And you just get so used to that that I think even though we were in different locations, it seems crazy from 10,000 feet, but once it all comes together and you start executing the show, it starts feeling a little more natural. I don't want to demean anything that was done because I think everybody did an incredible job of putting the show on the air, but I think a lot of that speaks to the experience we had of doing things like this in the past.
How about just the product for the drivers? Do you think it changed anything in your mind? I mean, Kevin Harvick won. Like I said, Bowman was your runner-up. Kurt Busch finished third. Just the product on the track. They've got limited, right? There was no practice or no qualifying. They basically get out, get in the car, and they went racing yesterday. Did you feel any different? And they've been off for a long time. Did you feel that the product looked any different?
Well, I just felt like what we saw yesterday was a tremendous testament to the drivers and teams because you touched on everything there in regard to the limitations we had as far as practice and qualifying and opportunities to set up the car and the long break, not just for the drivers, but all those pit crew members that had to go over the wall and service the vehicles a number of times. And at the end of the day, you had 10 cautions. And when you break that down, three of those were either stage end or that competition caution. You had a couple of other minor spins, tire issues, whatever. There were few. I will say there were a few what I would call mistakes by drivers and teams. And when you consider what went into yesterday, the long break, and just the overall adversities that these teams faced, I just think it goes back to they're a bunch of professionals, and maybe yesterday there was a heightened awareness, a centralized focus because you hadn't done it in a while, and so you made sure and checked every box mentally before you got in the race car or you went over the wall. But I just felt like top to bottom, everybody did a really nice job of executing under those circumstances.
We're talking to Adam Alexander from Fox NASCAR. He, of course, host of Race Hub, and you'll hear him on the Xfinity Series broadcast tomorrow night, 7 o'clock Central, on FS1. Adam, I am curious, going back to Regan being on pit road and the decision to only send one pit road reporter, but how much of a discussion that you know about went into, okay, when he's on camera, he'll still have the mask? Because we've seen in some instances with broadcasts that when they're not on camera, they're wearing a mask, but they take it off. Was that a NASCAR decision? Was that a Fox decision? Or do you even have an answer to that?
I'm not sure that there was any negotiation with that. It's my understanding that NASCAR made it pretty well known that their protocol was going to be you have to have a mask on. Doesn't matter what role you play. Doesn't matter what your level of social distancing is. If you're going to be a participant, you need to wear a mask. And I think in all the conference calls I've been a part of, whether it was a joint call between Fox and NASCAR or it was just something on the TV network side, the one thing that we have emphasized is, number one, safety is the utmost top of the list as far as what we're going to do from an execution standpoint. And then the other thing is we're going to follow all rules. There is no special treatment. There is no jumping to the front of the line. There is no, but I'm TV. We are all going to play by the same rules. And so I think probably that was just an optics thing. That's what everybody else is doing. That's what we need to do. And certainly Regan was comfortable, playing by those rules. And so I think that's probably what it was. We just wanted to make sure that everybody was on the same page and doing business the same way. And that's the way it landed. And, I know there was some stuff on social media, and not that you could put any stock in that, because everybody's going to have their opinion, and certainly they don't have a hard time voicing it. But I thought what we saw yesterday was probably exactly what it needed to be from a uniformity standpoint and just an overall accommodation standpoint in regard to safety.
What are some notes that maybe you took as a lap-by-lap announcer for the Xfinity Series? Have you talked to Mike Joy at all about some things that he experienced that you can use for tomorrow night's broadcast?
I haven't. I mean, I'm familiar with the setup. that we'll be using to kind of create our booths scenario that Mike and Jeff used yesterday and what we'll use tomorrow night. It'll be Clint Boyer, Michael Waltrip, and myself calling the Xfinity race. I think really I've done these races from the studio before, so I have a little bit of experience. I've not done it in the exact same setup that they used yesterday, but once you're there, everything is pretty much the same. So Mike and I have not talked, but I feel very comfortable in what the setup will be and how we'll execute it. And I think in many ways, it puts you more on a level playing field with the viewer at home. Sometimes I feel like when you're at the track, you get to watching out the window, you get distracted by things in and around the racetrack that maybe take your focus away from the TV monitor, and that's what the people at home are watching and what you should be talking about. And sometimes maybe you're not totally on the same page with the viewer at home. I think by being in the studio and working off of that monitor, even though we'll have additional monitors and some other tools that we can use to enhance our coverage and tell the story of the race, I do think that you're much more in tune with the viewer when you're in the studio. There are advantages and disadvantages, certainly, but I think this format is one that is very conducive to putting on a good show.
Lost in some of this, Adam, another big story, the return of Matt Kenseth as he takes over the 42 Chip Ganassi Racing Chevy, finishes 10th, and Ryan Newman in his first race since his horrific crash at Daytona, where we didn't know what to expect when that crash happened. But let's start with Newman, of just how awesome it was to see him back in a race car. And he had a pretty good run going until the end of the race, had a little bit of a problem, but overall it seemed like Newman hadn't missed a beat.
Well, and I think that's what we expected out of Ryan Newman. That's just the way he does business, right? I mean, he's an old school racer, and he's always in that race shape, and you just put him in a car and let him go. And I think that what I saw yesterday out of Newman didn't surprise me at all, and I wouldn't have been surprised if he finished up there in the top 10. I just think Newman is a pro. He's always been able to adapt. He's a throwback. Darlington's a track that suits his driving style quite well, and it was certainly great to see him back in racing after that short time away. You know, he ends up only missing three events, and that's big for him as you start to look down the road with him getting the championship waiver and an opportunity to get back in a points position, maybe to make the playoffs, but certainly maybe even win a race. So I was glad to see Ryan back, and what he did yesterday really didn't surprise me at all. I didn't know what to expect out of Matt Kenseth, and I can't imagine being away as long as he was, coming back and just having no experience whatsoever with his team or the car and having to jump in and go racing at Darlington. I thought what he did was incredible. And certainly when you look at the results, you see all those Chevys up there. His teammate Kurt Busch had a great run. So it stands to reason he probably had a good car and was going to be in position to be successful. But a top 10 against the competition he was racing against, and the disadvantages that were thrown his way just by not having experience recently, I think it speaks to what a pro he is, and certainly someday we know that Matt's going to be in the Hall of Fame as a former champion. It was great to see both those guys back on track.
And then Kevin Harvick gets his 50th career win, passes Tony Stewart. And, you know, Harvick, I like the start of his season, obviously the points leader, but gets his first win. It seems like Stuart Haas Racing and Kevin Harvick, at least in the early part of the season, are back to maybe where they were a couple of years ago, and could be a contender for sure for this championship.
Harvick, the only driver to finish top 10 in every race this year, and yesterday, as you said, puts a big exclamation point on it with his 50th career victory, and I think this is a sign of things to come maybe as we return to racing. Everyone wondered who would have the advantage, and I think Kevin in many ways does, not just because he's good at Darlington, and that's where we'll go for these first two races. But I think when you look at the depth of that race team, the chemistry between he and his crew chief, Rodney Childers, they're both great veterans. I think Kevin is so strong mentally. And to me, mental toughness is going to be a big hurdle to climb for a lot of these drivers as we run, you know, four races in the next 11 days, starting with yesterday's race at Darlington. I think it's five races in 15 or 16 days, something like that. When you loop Bristol in, that's now been added to the schedule that weekend following the Coke 600, you have to be able to adjust night in and night out mentally. And I just think Kevin has always been one of the strongest drivers on the mental side. And forget the fact that he's with a great race team and has a great race car. I just think this format sets up really good for him. And the fast race car and all that is just a bonus. So when all the worlds collide, it equals big-time success, I think, for Kevin Harvick. And the fact that he announced earlier this year he's not going anywhere, he's going to continue racing for many years to come, that should concern the competition because he appears just to be getting better and better as time goes on.
No doubt about it. And the sport is back, and I bet they got a lot of new eyeballs on the product starting yesterday, and that'll continue again tomorrow night with you on the call, and then the Cup Series will be right back at it again on Wednesday night. So a lot of racing to come. Adam, thanks for the visit. Really appreciate it.
Always great to be with you. I appreciate you having me on. You guys have a good day.
You do the same. That is Adam Alexander, NASCAR on Fox, and he will indeed be in the booth. You just heard Clint Bowyer, he's Adam Alexander. Who else would he say was a part of that team, Chase?
Mikey Waltrip.
That's right. They will be covering the Xfinity race at Darlington starting at 7 o'clock our time tomorrow night on FS1. We'll come back. More of Darren, Donnick, and Chase next. If you own or manage a small business and you're open and you'd like to let people know about that, you need to check out Free Business Friday. It has been a huge success. We've had three installments now. So three Fridays we've been giving you Free Business Friday, which is an opportunity for a small business to get free advertising if you're safely open and you're working. It's a no-cost, no-catch to you. You can visit thegamenashville.com/FBF for more information. Free Business Friday is our way of supporting small businesses as we get through this together. It has been a huge success, and if you're hearing this for the first time, go check it out on the website. You're probably going to want to get involved if you are safely back open and you want to get the word out. It's been a lot of fun. Do you guys believe it was, of course, you know, at the end, Michael Jordan saying, I would have came back for a year. Phil would have came back for a year. Pip, you would have had to work on him. But Steve Kerr, those guys, you could have brought them back for a year. Do you believe that they could have gotten number seven?
I don't think so. I think it would have set it up for what we all, I think, wanted to see. Is them going for a seventh and then somebody finally ending it naturally.
Yeah.
Right? That's what usually happens. Like
usually.
The Bad Boys finally aged out and could not hang on and got beat by the Bulls. The Celtics got beat by the Pistons a few years before that. It gets to that. I would have loved to have seen it. What did complicate things, and it really was not covered at all in the piece, was that there was a lockout the next year. Remember, they only played about a half a season or a little over half a season.
50 games, yeah.
The following year. And so that complicated things a lot. And Pippen was gone, right? I don't know if they could have convinced
him to
come back.
They're not convincing him.
That would have been very, very tough. No way.
I don't know. I mean, I think, honestly, it was no way for Phil Jackson. I mean, Phil Jackson deserves to say no way. I mean, he deserves to tell Jerry Krause, peel the banana. Okay, with three fingers, holding three fingers up. I mean, you know, it's ridiculous what Jerry Krause did. That is interesting. Jerry Reinsdorf was so, that is probably the one disappointing thing to me, and I get it. It's kind of like what we've talked about with Michael Jordan, right? It's like, oh, you know, he's the host. He shouldn't be having that much control. Well, yeah, but then you don't get Michael Jordan to the level you do. So what do you want? Do you want the – you have to pick and choose, right? And so in the end, yeah, would I probably like to have him to have a little bit less control? Yeah, but I'm also glad that he was featured as much as he was because, you know, more Michael Jordan or less Michael Jordan I don't think enhances the episodes. The same holds true for Reinsdorf, who I used to always call him Reinsdork. I mean, for years, that's all I ever referred to him as, Jerry Reinsdork. He's not a very good owner. This just in. He got lucky with that dynasty, but he's not a very good owner. But I think what's been disappointing is, and I understand because Michael Jordan is an owner now, and by the way, he employed Michael Jordan. He gave him a lot of money in his playing days. And also, by the way, geez, when he played baseball, where did he play? Oh, the White Sox system. Who owns that? Reinsdorf. So I get all that. But he has been given a complete hall pass in this whole documentary of 10 episodes. I mean, Reinsdorf has not been shown in the proper light, in my opinion. He has not been a very good owner. He had made poor, poor decisions. He's always been cheap. The White Sox have, for the most part, have been a laughingstock, more of a butt of jokes on his watch. You had that run of that dynasty, but outside of that, what have the Bulls been? And he's really been given, you know, Jerry Krause has been dumped on and others, but nobody has really taken any shots at Reinsdorf in this, and he deserves shots. But like I said, I get it. He's an owner. Jordan's an owner. And Jordan doesn't want to make him look like, you know, a dope. I get that. But it's been disappointing because I wish they would have shed him in a different light.
No, I agree. I agree with
you. I didn't think he did a very good job of articulating his reasons why they didn't try to keep it together. It was all you saw. You heard him kind of go all over the map, and Michael Jordan sitting there just kind of smirking and going, "What is he talking about?" You know, and Michael Jordan made the point that once they went down that road a year before, that this is it for Phil Jackson, then all was lost. That was the mistake that they made, is not keeping the door open and going from year to year. But Reinsdorf did. If you weed through all of the rambling, he illustrated the issues. Number one, there was a lockout. They didn't really talk about that. Number two, they did have a lot of free agents. I don't know if it's quite as simple as Michael Jordan say all those guys would have come back on one-year deals. That's easy to say if you're Michael Jordan. But for Luke Longley, who was about to get a really good lucrative contract, you know, along with Pippen, that may be a little bit easier said than done. And then you factor in you have an emerging Spurs team. Right, you have Tim Duncan now with David Robinson. You now have Kobe Bryant and Shaq being united on the Lakers. So you're starting to get some more heavyweights, younger teams that would sort of, you know, define the next decade. I don't know if they would have won the next year. It would have been a heck of a drama, though. I would have loved to have seen it.
Yeah, I just think that, and even if Reinsdorf had done what he was supposed to do and said, you know, nipped it all in the butt right at the beginning of saying, hey, we're not having this discussion. If Phil wants to come back, then we'll discuss that at the end of the season, but we're not making any of those decisions right now. Let's go win six, and then we'll talk about it. He didn't do that. I think the bad blood was there. Scotty was gone. Scotty didn't want to be there. He rallied for Michael and won the sixth, but that wasn't going to happen. I mean, he was going to double down in the offseason and ask for a trade, and he got traded. I mean, we know that's what ended up happening. And I think the West was, the Spurs were, as you were saying, they were emerging. I don't think it was going to happen. So
we would have liked to have known. I mean, just what a dumb
move
by the general manager.
You can tell it burned Michael Jordan.
Why would a general manager
come
out
at
the beginning of a season say that? Why? It serves no purpose whatsoever.
Because he wanted to show what power he had.
What a just a stupid move that was for a general manager to come out and say. And once again, I blame the owner. The owner should have never allowed that to happen. Should have never allowed his general manager to do something that stupid at the beginning. I mean, just what a dumb, and I don't blame Phil Jackson. I do. Now that is an interesting point. Like, what if Reinsdorf would have done the right, just said, Jerry, you know what? You have botched this thing. I want to see one more year. You're fired. If Phil said, then I think that changes Phil's mind. Look, you're right about, you can say that stuff about Pippen and there's already in Longley. Look, if MJ and Phil are back, the pressure to win seven and do, you know, the rarity of that, what we would, you know, to try to tie that would be really hard for somebody to still walk away from. I believe in the end they would have figured out a way to make it work. If indeed that would have happened, that's the only way it happens, is if he would have fired Krause, which, you know, he didn't, because he's not a good owner. But That would have been interesting if Reinsdorf would have looked at Kraus and said, you know what, you have botched this thing, and you're out.
And it might have been appealing for Jordan at the age he was getting to, playing only a half a season, right? Because that might have helped him stay fresh for another playoff run. Maybe they wouldn't have been as
exhausted. Because he was
exhausted,
as he said. I mean, yeah. He was absolutely exhausted.
He used that line a lot. But, I mean, he's one of a kind, you know, so he can – He used that to drive himself. But, yeah, that there is a grind, just as we're seeing with the Warriors now, year in and year out, going all the way to the finish line. It does take its toll on you and make you age. But that would have been fun. You can tell it burned Michael Jordan not to get a chance to see if they could pull it off one more time.
Because people didn't think they were going to win it for the sixth time.
No, because they thought the damage had already been done.
That's why I wanted to see more from the Jazz, because that was a great team that never won it. And if you look at some of those games, they were in position to win several games that they didn't win, and just one or two swings could have given them a chance to play, for example, a game 7 on their home court in 98, or maybe push it to game 7 in 97. You never know what could have happened there. They were very close. In those games, other than the one blowout that we mentioned there. Here's another thing that I read about that wasn't
covered. By the way, I think they would have lost Game 7, personally. Well, if they don't pull that Game 6 out, I think they lose Game 7.
Well, and Scottie Pippen's back. Who knows
how
that would have responded for a Game 7, for sure. But here's one thing on the they broke it up, why, that Reinsdorf brought up in an article on ESPN. You can see right now, ESPN.com. That I had forgotten about, but I do remember it happening. Remember Michael Jordan cut his finger with a cigar cutter? And he, in theory, would have missed the whole next year anyway. Now, who knows? It's a what if. Like, maybe he would have been behaving differently and not playing as much golf and not been messing around with the cigar cutter if he knew he was playing the next year. We'll never know. But that was a little point that was made by Reinsdorf that could have complicated things, because that did happen.
Yeah. Yeah, once again, in the category of things we'll never know.
one of the greatest and big sports mysteries of what it would look like. But my whole takeaway with Jerry Krause was this was somebody that felt in his mind he didn't get enough credit. He wanted to be one of the rock stars like Phil Jackson or MJ or Scottie Pippen, and he wasn't. And this was his way of showing, well, I have the power. Because I have Reinsdorf wrapped around my finger. I can blow this up anytime I want. And that's exactly what he did. Now, is that a victory? No, because he's getting blasted for that. And, you know, unfortunately, he's not here to defend himself. But that's the perception, and that's how it was portrayed in the film.
Well, how did it look after all that?
They finished dead last.
Yeah.
Some people might tell you they're still rebuilding.
Yeah. Exactly. That's my point. Yeah, how'd that work out?
They really haven't had. They've only had one really good team since then, when you get down to it. Yeah, the Derrick Rose team.
Joakim Noah. But
Really? I mean, you know.
No, I mean, I'm being facetious. Like, that's the closest they've gotten, and it's not very close.
I'll tell you what. I have a greater respect for – not that I didn't already. Look, I have never bought in – and you guys know, you've heard me say this. Like, I've never bought into people that want to throw shade at Phil Jackson. He had Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen. He had Shaq and Kobe. Well, duh. You know, so did all the greats. Bill Walsh gets so much credit. Well, look at those 49ers team. Chuck Knoll. Look at those Steelers team. I mean, of course, that's how it works. You have to
have the
great players. But you know what? That doesn't guarantee you success. Like, the coach is he was so vitally important and how he handled that unique dynamic and those massive egos. And, you know, it's what – think about it. It's what LeBron – we always – how's LeBron worked out? Well, I mean, all we do is usually talk about how he gets all the coaches fired, right? Phil Jackson, nobody – it was just the opposite. It could have been easier. You don't think Michael Jordan is exactly like LeBron? You know, he wants – you heard it in that timeout. On the switch, he's like, no, I'm going to fight through it. That's how those guys are wired. In the end, Phil had to back off and let him do his thing, And not everybody's equipped to do that, just like Dennis Rodman in handling that situation and the things that he did. He was a mastermind in how he handled these teams. If you think anybody could have gone out there and rolled out the ball and come away with six championships, I think you're crazy. They don't do it unless they have Phil Jackson.
Yeah.
And Kraus should get credit for
that. I think
that's
a fair point.
As much as I've dumped on him on how he handled the final year. But he does get credit for, you know, bringing in Phil Jackson, because he is the reason. He is a big part of why they had the success they did.
Because he made the change.
I think that is something that was brought out in the article. If you look, ESPN's got a good sort of postscript of the aftermath of it. And that is something that I think Jerry Krause was bitter about it. He rescued Phil Jackson out of the CBA. In fact, I remember I got Phil Jackson's autograph. I still have it in my basement right now. When he was an assistant coach for the Nets, he was just standing there. Very few people knew who he was at the time. My dad recognized him because he used to play for the Knicks, and I went and got his autograph when I was probably 10 years old or something. But then he goes from there to the CBA. I mean, he's at the CBA. He's in oblivion. And Krause is like, I pulled you out and I brought you here. I lobbied for you to get the job when it was not a no-brainer, because Doug Collins was doing a pretty good job. It's not that they were losing a lot. You know, they were winning their fair share of games. And then, you know, for it to go sideways like it did, that became a serious power struggle there.
Well, I think, you know, I don't know what changed. It just seems like Jerry was, you know, Michael got credit, Phil got credit. It's just like the more people got credit, the more Jerry Krause, you know, wanted to stand up on his chair and scream from, you know, a little bit higher up, since he was a shorter guy, for people to listen to him. Like, I'm the reason. Look, I can do it. Just I don't know if Phil ever did anything. I just think they had success, and he was given, you know, the credit. And so it bothered Jerry. But, I mean, it's just, like I said, the going into that final season to say that, I mean, just the stupidity is mind-blowing for a guy who did a really good job of building that dynasty, and he would have gotten the credit, but it just wasn't enough. He wanted to be more of a centerpiece of everybody talking about it, and it was never going to happen. Yeah. It wasn't going to happen with the players, didn't happen anywhere. It didn't, not to Jerry Krause's level, and it's just silly because he could have been, and he finally got what he wanted, and how'd that rebuild go?
Well. And Craig Sager, I mean, I love the clip of Craig Sager calling him out, you know, in the press conference and saying the backstabbing. And obviously that ticked him off, and he said there's no backstabbing. Then he walked off, and, you know, everybody's saying good job, Craig, but I mean, it was the truth, and good on Sager for calling him out, because that's exactly what it was. It was just behind the scenes, you know, backstabbing of Phil Jackson and wanting that credit that he so desired, and now look how he's portrayed.
Yeah. And like I said, so it was disappointing that Reinsdorf didn't get, you know, he was shed in the light. I know he wasn't very prominent in the whole thing, but and that's probably why. They're probably like, well, if we can't really tell the story about him, we'll probably just keep him on a very limited basis. I mean, but you saw, I think what's interesting is seeing Michael Jordan's reaction every time they decided in, you know, an episode to show him the iPad, and this is what so-and-so said, you know, whether it was Isaiah Thomas or whether it was Jerry Reinsdorf, and just watch Michael Jordan's reaction. Because usually every reaction was, you know, an eye roll and a, yeah, well. And just watching him, you know, because when he saw.
He's got new memes now.
Yeah, right. And him seeing things for the first time. Usually he didn't always, most of the time he really never agreed with that. And, you know, I think that's what makes it fun. And like I said, that's the part you want to see. You want to get that raw reaction from Michael Jordan. So it's better to have him in there doing that than maybe not as much and having more control over the content. Although I don't know. I mean, I don't know. It's hard to say that, because what would we have really learned? I mean, did you buy the pizza? I mean, some of the things that we learned in the 10 episodes, would you really have bought it if it was more, if some of us suspect that there's a lot more to be told that that, you know, were not going to be allowed to be told. I don't know. It maybe would have enhanced it even more, you know, yeah. with less Michael. I don't know. We'll never know.
I don't buy it.
You guys buying the pizza story?
No, I don't.
Are you?
I don't know. It just seemed like it was a strange. I would want to know more.
You think it was strange?
Very rehearsed. Yeah, Five guys deliver a pizza. MJ eats it, gets sick.
I thought five guys did burgers.
If they,
it's true.
But are they saying that they intentionally poisoned the pizza, or it just was a bad pizza? They didn't clarify intentionally.
Well, I don't know, but
right. They soured the pizza or something, or they just it was the only place open and it was just a bad pizza place.
I mean, I think the point is they're trying to cover, because there's always been that rumor of, oh, he was just hungover. And that's that. I mean, that's what it was. But, you know, that, who knows? It just seems there's something fishy about it. We'll never know the truth.
There's no way he's going to go into game five hungover. He clearly was sick. But it's just too simple in a box. You know, it was a bad pizza. And like you said, rehearsed, and you had everybody sort of saying it was just weird the way they did that.
Well, if he was sick, why wouldn't you just say he was sick? I mean, why would you come up with a pizza story? When you say there's no way he could have been hungover, there's no way?
Michael Jordan doesn't show up to games hungover in the NBA Finals. Now, Dennis Rodman? Is that possible? I guess so. But
drinking and golfing during the NBA Finals and went out to casinos all night gambling, and you don't think he was drinking during the NBA Finals?
I just know he played
drinking
a lot of NBA Final games.
You just think
a lot
he was drinking tonic
games,
in the casinos?
He didn't show up sick.
You just think he was drinking tonic at the casinos?
No, but no, Darren. There's a difference between having a couple of drinks and showing up completely dehydrated and sick and throwing up all night. That's a whole different thing. That's being completely reckless and unprofessional. There's nothing that would indicate he did that. He clearly got sick. I just think it was weird of the way that they told the story. I'm not saying it was totally I'm not buying it at all, but the whole thing of the five guys showing up, it's like, what does that have to do with food poisoning? I mean, and why didn't they just say it was food poisoning at the time? You know, that's the other thing I was curious about. It can happen, as we've seen with the Predators. You can eat some food and it sets everybody down.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's my point. But when you say there's no way, I raise my eyebrows.
There's
no
way he's showing up to the NBA Finals hungover. There's no way he's going to show up hungover for an
food
NBA
poisoning?
Finals game.
So you would hide food poisoning. What is there to hide?
That's what I don't get. That's what I don't get.
Well, then maybe
it's... Why didn't they say, why doesn't Ahmad Rashad, who has special access, why isn't he just saying at the time, at courtside, Michael Jordan is suffering from what they think is food poisoning. He ate some bad food. It doesn't even matter whether it was pizza or just the dinner he had. But the flu is different than food poisoning. Right?
I don't know. Maybe you say that because you are hiding something you don't want out there publicly. I mean, I don't know. I'm just
thinking
out loud. Yeah,
because Ahmad Rashad probably knows, because they're very close.
They were very close.
Yes.
He was with him all the time. So,
you think Ahmad is going to rat him out? No.
Ahmad Rashad could have been with him.
No, but what is ratting out? There's no ratting
telling,
out about
telling
being
that,
accurate
really,
and saying it's
telling
food.
Really
it's
what
bad
happened?
Food. We think it's food poisoning.
Right. Then why didn't they?
Yeah.
Why?
If it's food poisoning, there's nothing to hide.
Okay. Then why not say
then it? Then why are we sitting here saying
right.
that it's so
right.
rehearsed
exactly.
and we don't believe it? I mean, I understand why.
I just thought it was curious that they said flu, which means you think you got sick for something. That does happen, you know, during the course of a season. It can happen. And so can food poisoning. But they're two different things, and usually you can figure out which one it is, right?
But
so I just thought it was weird that
symptoms.
Everything back then was the flu. Yeah, everything that we talked about, everything that was reported back then had to do with the flu. And now we hear about the pizza. But so I'm just curious, why not the pizza story or – You didn't have to get specific about the ordering of the pizza and who was with you or anything like that. But at the time, you could have put out a message saying, Michael, we think just ate some food that was bad. We think it's food poisoning. He's going to try to give it a go, etc.
I think you're making the point for us. It doesn't make any sense to hide it. So what really happened? Yeah. I'm not willing to say there's no way. I'm not going that far.
People knew his reputation. They knew that, I mean, he had already done stuff like that before. I mean, he was, like you said, playing golf or going to Atlantic City or something like that. So, I mean, to say that there's no way the night before a championship game he's, you know, drinking whatever and partying, I don't know about that.
The same way Dennis Rodman wouldn't. I mean, that's what they did.
He left to go wrestle.
There's no way. That I'm not buying that. He's played in so many playoff games before. There's not one other incident where you can say that there was a story at the time. Boy, Michael Jordan, he really didn't seem like he was himself. He looked like he was hungover. That had never happened in hundreds of playoff games. So that clearly was not the issue.
Okay. You have your version. Clearly, yeah, you have your version, and I do not sign up for that version. You're on your own with
that. You think he was hungover for the NBA Finals Game 5?
I think there is more to this, and for you to say no way and impossible, I think that is way too strong for me. There's no way I would
more,
say that.
More to this, yes, we agree on maybe there's more to this. But hungover, that's not one of the scenarios. No way.
Okay, that's your words.
Guy doesn't get hungover for an NBA Finals game. No. Not the greatest player of all time. Doesn't show up hungover.
Oh, okay. But he'll go out to casinos? He goes out to casinos all night, but not hungover. Okay. Okay.
He didn't go to the casino in Atlantic City the night before the game.
Have you ever been to a casino? I mean, honestly, no way.
Hold on a second.
He goes to a casino all night during the finals, but there's no way. Like, that's where the line is drawn. There's no way he could have had too much to drink? Okay. Yeah.
No.
I'm not going
there.
You
can have drinks at a casino. You can have your share of drinks at a casino and not be hungover to the point where you almost can't stand up the next day. That's different.
Okay.
That's totally different.
We'll agree to disagree. We'll come back, wrap up the hour with This Is What I Know. This is what I know. I don't agree with what Willie just said. We'll be back. Yes, we want to know. What do you know? It's a very easy question. What do you know? Take it however you want. Just keep it clean. 615-737-1025. 737-1025. The best one will get a $25 gift card to Tin Roof. $25 gift card to Tin Roof for the best to Wick. Teron Davenport coming up at high noon. So we'll talk with TD on the other side. We normally talk to Vince at that time on Mondays, but he's doing middays in Knoxville this week, so we had him earlier in the show. So we'll talk to Teron. We'll hear from Chase's interview with Tom Glavine on Friday night. We'll hear some of that coming up at 1 o'clock. Who wants to start? Not everybody at once.
Willie? Okay, I can start.
I'll start.
All right, go ahead.
Well, go ahead.
There's such a delay. It makes things difficult sometimes. Okay, this is what I know. And we talked about this a lot to start the hour, but NASCAR stole the show yesterday. They did a tremendous job with their television product and the race, because if you're going to have a bunch of people watching, you want to have a good product. And I thought that they did that. You know, Darlington is not an easy place to go. So after being off for 2.5 months, not having practice, not having qualifying, that's a tough track to go to. And I thought it was a great show. So that's what I know. They pulled it off, and I can't wait to see what it looks like moving forward, starting tomorrow night with Xfinity and then on Wednesday.
Okay.
All right. This is what I know. Don't change a winning game. That's the phrase I was thinking this morning as I was hearing the mayor and his task force talk about the numbers. There's some really encouraging numbers for the past week since we've gone into phase one. But as they all said, we got to make sure we keep doing the right things there. The stuff can work, and it can keep us on the road to phase two, so Marquise and Darren can get their haircuts the way they want to, where they want to. But don't change the winning game. Don't get cocky because the numbers are going down, and they are going down. That's good stuff. And for example, you saw the NASCAR people, all of them on pit road, wearing the mask, doing the right things. Even as Chase pointed out, you know, they looked and they said, okay, you guys need to separate a little more. That's good. Keep doing those things. Keep cleaning up everything. Keep your hands clean, all of that stuff. And don't let me hear the rights are being violated because I'm not wearing a mask. Those are my rights. It's my right not to wear a mask. Don't give me that stuff, okay? If the NASCAR pit road people can wear the masks, then you can wear a mask, all right? It's not that much to ask. Just get a mask, get a bandana, something you like, put it on, and do your thing. Nobody would choose to do it, probably. Just do it.
By the way, did you guys see?
Our stuff's working. Let's get to phase two.
Did you guys see Costco trolling people on Twitter that were, you know, so angry about them implementing that you have to wear a mask in their store? I thought it was they went savage on some customers.
Yes.
It was great. I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah, and the one guy's yelling, "These are my constitutional rights."
Right.
Stop with the constitutional rights. Stop
it. And he's like, "I want a refund
on
my membership." They're like, "Yeah, we're not giving you a refund."
That's awesome. Good for them.
Oh, yeah. It's just so ridiculous. It's like,
I told you.
You don't have the right to tell me I have to wear a mask. Really? So restaurants tell you you have to wear shoes and you have to wear a shirt. Isn't it your right to not wear a shirt, not wear shoes? How come you don't protest restaurants that make you do that? What? People, right? How many times have we seen no shirt, no shoes? What? No what? No service.
No dice.
No service.
No.
Well, why aren't
Spicoli.
You? Why aren't you going Spicoli. After the restaurants, telling them, "Hey, it's my right to keep my shirt off. It's my right not to have to wear shoes."
And their response is probably, "This is different."
That's
so, what they sound like.
But
it's not different.
I thought it was fantastic for Costco just to tell that one guy, "Yeah, just because you're just acting like a jack wagon, yeah, we're not even going to refund you."
I had another incident. It wasn't to the extent of what I told, and you just made the list, but another person, and look, I'll say it, they were younger. No mask, just walk up behind me in the checkout line, get right up in my business, in my bubble. And it's like, really? Do you just not care? Do you not pay attention? Like, is it all of the above? Are you oblivious? Like, come on, just back. And that's just normal protocol. Just give people space. Like, I don't need you right up next to me. I don't know you. I don't know where you've been.
Do you know that?
Yeah,
you know,
if you're not wearing the mask or you forgot your mask or something, then you should be that much more conscious about staying back. I can understand that. Like, you get out your house, you're down the road. Oh, man, I forgot my mask. Well, then be 8 feet away. Be 10 feet away. Be extra conscious about, you know, staying away. Not, I mean, that gives yourself away. If you're not wearing a mask and you're up in somebody's space, then you're clearly not paying any attention.
The mask is just not just for you. It's for everybody else too. You understand that? It's not just for you.
Me. All about me.
Oh, my goodness. I already did my "This is what I know" back when we had Vince on in the first hour, just because I thought it was a really cool story. I don't know if people saw this or not, but on SportsCenter had Jordan Bone and his mom on, and I think it was on Friday, and it was kind of a recognition for, you know, kind of a Mother's Day surprise, and instead they ended up showing that, you know, they let him know that he graduated, and his mom, and Rick Barnes came into the – they had a Rick Barnes video, and they had Chancellor Plowman, I believe is her name, and basically telling him congratulations on graduating. It was obviously his mom's wish for Jordan Bone to graduate. And I just, if you haven't seen the video, it's really cool. And his mom just absolutely loses it. It's a really cool story. So go check it out. All you have to do is just Google it, and the video will come up. But for those who haven't seen it, it's really neat. So good job by ESPN and SportsCenter for shedding light on that and having that moment, and Rick Barnes and the Chancellor at UT And good for Jordan Bone, right, for finishing things up and getting his degree. So, you know, claps all around for everybody and for mom for pushing her son to finish up school. So I just thought it was a cool story. That's what I know. 615-737-1025. Like I said, we've got a gift card to 10 Roof on the line. Let's go to Ryan. Ryan, what do you know?
I was listening to your Jordan talk. This is what I know. You could take Jordan and put him in today's game, and you could take LeBron and put him back in Jordan's game in the 90s. Jordan wins all nine championships that LeBron's been in. Jordan is the MVP in all nine. If you put LeBron on those Bulls teams, they might win three, maybe. The Jazz beat them both times. I think the Phoenix Suns would have beat them with LeBron. After watching The Last Dance, not a doubt in my mind who the GOAT is. Not a doubt.
Ryan, let me ask you something. Hey, Ryan, real quick before you hang up, do you think the style in that decade would have been, though, conducive for LeBron because of his body type to take the beating and to deliver beating?
Yeah, but you know what? You know what showed me with Jordan? It was his determination and will to win, which, dude, LeBron is a specimen among specimens. But Jordan's drive and determination, I think, is what got him. I mean, you know, they showed the flu game. They showed the, you know, Pippen is out. They showed all those things. And for me, LeBron, everything had to fall in place for him to win the three that he won. And I'm not saying he is on Mount Rushmore. He's all that. But I think it's interesting. You can't take Babe Ruth and put him in today's game. I mean, there's no way, right? You can't take these two guys. I feel like you could swap them, and Jordan would win. He wouldn't have won the first one when they got swept by the Spurs. You know, what was it, 2006 or 7, something like that. But the nine that he was in with Cleveland and Miami, Jordan would have won all of those. With the cast that they had, Jordan would have won all nine. And I'm telling you, I don't think LeBron could have beat maybe three. And he wouldn't have been – he wasn't the MVP of the nine that he was in. That's the thing that clears me with Jordan. He was 6 for 6. He was the MVP of all six. Even you go – you know, some people want to put Kobe in the mix. I mean, the five that he won, Shaq was the MVP of two or three of them. You know what I'm saying? I mean, man, it was – after watching The Last Dance, It was awesome. It was awesome, and it made me realize, man, you know, when you were watching it, you knew he was the greatest, but you're like, ah, maybe I'm having euphoric recall or whatever. Man, after watching that, man, he's legit. He's legit.
Thank you, Ryan.
See you, fellas.
Yep, appreciate it. One thing I will agree with for sure, Jordan would thrive in today's game. I mean, thrive. I'll probably give a little pushback on what I said.
What I
think LeBron's
seen?
Body type would actually make him conducive to the rougher game because he is a freak. His body type is a freak of nature, and I actually think it would have helped him in that game, especially in the slow it down, rough and tumble.
Yeah.
But there's no doubt I agree. Jordan in today's game, holy cow, you're talking about thriving. Woo, I agree with Ryan on that.
The thing that's different about the game, not only – with the physicality, there's because the game is spread out more, right? The big men don't sit there in the paint, right? They go out and shoot threes now. So that would be the thing that I would be curious to see how Jordan evolved. He got better at shooting threes, but if you really look at his three-point shooting stats, he didn't really utilize the three-point shot very much, whereas LeBron has really had to work on his shot to shoot threes more. There's so many more threes per game taken now, it's not even close. So I do agree that Jordan would thrive for sure, but he would definitely have to change his game just because the whole game has evolved because you don't have the big aircraft carriers in the middle. They're just as big and they're just as long, but they go out and shoot threes now. They don't post up and take skyhooks.
Yeah, but look at that shooting contest they had at practice they showed last night. How far out was that? I don't know, about 35, 40 feet.
Oh, yeah, he could have done it.
But nobody hit it, but Jordan goes up there and drills it.
Sure, sure. He was capable. He had the game against the Blazers, right, where he hit, what, five threes or whatever in the half. So he could have done it. He just would have done it more, right, because the numbers are telling you don't take the mid-range shots, you know, the turnaround fadeaways that he was taking so many of later in his career as he got older. it would have been more, you know, work out by the three-point line and shoot more. It's just the way the game evolves.
Let's go to Nate. Nate, what do you know?
This is what I know, fellas. If you are on a hot streak at a casino and they're serving free drinks, you're done the next day.
Because you're not leaving. You don't leave on a heater.
No. I'm saying you're when they're serving free drinks and you're on a hot streak and you're having a good time, the next day you're going to feel like Michael Jordan did. So I definitely think that it is a possibility. Yeah. Unlike Willie, who says there's no way.
Was there a casino in Utah?
Do what?
Is there a casino in Salt Lake City?
I mean, I'm sure there is.
I actually think there might be.
Is like, do you know that there's not?
No, I don't know. But why would, don't you think he might have been seen if he went to a casino in Salt Lake City? Somebody might have seen that?
Oh.
Yeah, but you don't have social media back then like you do today.
Yep. Thank you, Nate. Appreciate it. Look, I don't know. I don't know one way or the other, but for you to say there's no way and bring up the professionalism.
No way.
A professional would never be out gambling during the NBA Finals or golfing with an opponent from another team during the playoffs on a golf course. So you can throw the professionalism out the window. They wouldn't have been doing that anyway, and he already did that. I mean, come on. He already was doing things that nobody else would have done.
No way.
There is
no way he shows up to the game hungover in Game 5 of the NBA Finals.
That's
no
hilarious.
Way the greatest of all time does that.
No way.
Really, there is a Wendover in Wendover, Nevada.
0.0.
Yeah. There's the Nugget Hotel and Casino in Wendover, Nevada, which is not that far from Salt Lake City.
There you go. A casino not that far away.
Yeah, it's you know, he wouldn't have been the only guy in the casino. Somebody might have recognized him if he went there.
I'm sure he was home sleeping. You're right. He was in his room, hotel room.
He's a saint, so.
Yeah, we know that he, especially NBA Finals. I mean, he wouldn't do that, of course. Yeah, it's a good point. He probably learned from his
I'm
pastimes.
I'm saying he wouldn't have dinner
the
and a
past
couple
times
of drinks.
He was out at casinos during the NBA Finals. He probably wouldn't be doing
out,
it at the
but
end.
You don't show up so hungover.
Oh, I know. Yeah, that would never happen. Yeah, no way. No way. You're right. Especially when he did that before and kept winning championships. He would probably stop, right? Because it hurt him, right? Okay. We'll come back. Teron Davenport to kick off the third hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase. That's next.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.